You love Infinity Break shows, right? Okay, hear me out on this one. All of your favorite Infinity Break shows, but it's for 24 hours straight. Yeah, you heard me. January 26th and 27th, we're running the Infinity Showcase, a round-the-clock live stream of everything your friends at Infinity Break are capable of. The Super Cinema team will be ranking Spider-Man villains. Johnny has a bit of a devilish side quest prepared for his players, while Ben takes his players on a wild ride through the radioactive wasteland. You can expect plenty of tabletop, video games, comics, and comedy for the full 24 hours. And, of course, speak of the bard. Sorry about that. And that's not all! Stay tuned to our social media channels as we announce more of our lineup. I hope you're ready for the worst sleepover ever. Once again, that is January 26th and 27th on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/infinitybreakgaming. See you there!
Personal brand reinvention and hamster trails on this week of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. Folks, I'm the Ben of that.
And I'm the Leslie! This is a weekly podcast about Netflix original comedy series BoJack Horseman.
And Leslie, my pal, what episode are we talking about today?
Today we are going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 2, The BoJack Horseman Show.
Remember during the previous episode when that one reporter brought up the BoJack Horseman Show? And how Jill Pill mentioned BoJack's actual previous show? What was up with that? It's time to find out what was up with that. It's a flashback episode, and that means we're spending plenty of time with all your favorite characters in the distant land of 2007. Here, BoJack and a large charismatic hamster write a script in one night. See Mr. Peanut Butter and Diane's actual first reaction, and feel the wrath of 2007 Princess Carolyn's pretty kitty claws as she fights institutional sexism. It's a blast from the past on this week's of Horses and Men.
Wow, Ben.
Leslie, I love flashback episodes.
You had some fun with that one.
I did have some fun with that one. It's because I didn't have a better way to summarize this one.
Oh, it's beautiful. It brought a tear to my eye.
Thank you. You know I write serious dramatic stuff, too.
Do we? Whatever.
Doesn't matter. None of it's published.
It's all right. Continue.
Leslie, I love the flashback episodes so much.
They do such a good job. I don't even know how to describe what it is that they do exactly. There's nothing subtle about it.
No. It's certainly, this is not a show that tries. We're going to talk about an episode later this very day that, like, if there's a metaphor, it's the text. This show doesn't try with that. No, I think it is. It's with how hammy and overdone the flashback is that's what matters. Okay, every show does this shit. BoJack does just a lot more of it to hammer it home.
Sure.
You know, if any other show were doing like a 2007 flashback episode, someone would mention Nickelback. Hey, heard that new band, blank, 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 or whatever?
I think
that happens all the time in flashback episodes of shows. BoJack just leans into it by making the entire set the most 90s, 80s, or 2007 thing possible.
I think that it's definitely the sort of situation where they're not only just trying to make a really great joke with the fact that they're doing a flashback episode, but in true BoJack Horseman style, they're definitely sending up other shows that do this gimmick. And they do it really well. And I know that you have a lot of thoughts about the opening with Princess Carolyn, and I would love to hear them. Do you not?
How does this let me just check my
do
notes.
Do you not?
No, let me just check my notes.
How do you not
check my notes.
Have
let me just check my notes. Yes. Sorry. I wrote right here Princess Carolyn can get it.
Ben!
No, I mean, I did write that, but so I could say it as a joke. You are referencing the fake out.
Yes.
Yes, yes. I have notes about the fake out, which is that I think that is extremely clever. Because for the listener, this show started with Princess Carolyn and BoJack Horseman fucking. And when this episode starts, obviously they have since stopped that. But when this episode starts, we have no reason to think that it takes place in 2007. And it is not until the alarm clock explicitly says it's a sunny day in 2007. And then Princess Carolyn puts on some extremely 15 years ago clothing that we realize, oh, this is a flashback episode. But there's maybe like a solid 30, 45 seconds where...
we don't really know what's going on.
Where any viewer, including myself yesterday, might have thought this was contemporary.
Even though you'd seen this episode?
Well, I mean, I forgot this was the flashback one.
Yeah, me too, actually. I wanted to, like, even though I've watched this before, I completely forgot that that's how they started it. And I was like, what am I forgetting?
Yeah, yeah, there's that wonderful fake out. Because, again, the way it... BoJack Horseman is just so extremely good at the fake outs. I'm going to attribute that, obviously, to the clever writing, but I think also it succeeds very well because it's animation. Fake outs like the, oh, you know what? Fake outs like the, oh my God, the Diane bit, at the airport in the last season,
where we assume
she's still in Cordovia or on somewhere. And then it's revealed that's just a poster in the background while she's waiting at a terminal.
Yeah.
Or even my favorite fake out in the entire show, the, come on, BoJack, look, the future looks so bright. That one could be done in live action. I think the airport one is kind of only an animation one.
I mean, I think that they just do it. They just do all of them really well. And I think that this is yet another example of how they are using the medium of animation to really bring this story to life that can only be told in this specific way.
I really do. I did write every single one of them down. As I looked at all of the wacky 2007 references in the background, I really do have to marvel at this show and how much effort goes into gags that are on screen for less than a second.
Yeah.
We can attribute that to the fact that this is not live television, by which I mean it is not broadcast television. This is Netflix streaming, which means people are in the habit of pausing.
That's true.
To the point where they kind of satirized that in season 5. Someone's wearing a t-shirt that just says, stop pausing the show or something like that.
Yeah, it says something like, stop pausing and just watch the show or something along those lines.
Or, yeah. Leslie, did you happen to watch the Netflix original television program, The Haunting of Hill House?
I tried, and it did not grab me at all.
It is it's a slow burn start, but it gets real thrilling halfway through.
That's what I hear, but I just did not have the patience.
That is entirely understandable. Well, a thing that does, and basically a couple articles came out about it, pointing out all of these little background ghosts that were not the main focus. You know, they were not jump scares, nor were they like the twin girls at the end of the hallway, come play with us, Danny level ghosts or anything. They were just like weird faces in reflections or weird, creepy, Michael Myers Halloween looking dude standing in the shadows that you could only see if you were an aggressive pauser watching this on streaming television.
I see.
So Haunting of Hill House as well as BoJack takes advantage of the fact that this is not. I mean, I guess you could pull this shit in the DVR era.
I mean, I guess, but
there's something special about
same.
Netflix where the space bar is directly in front of you and you can just tap pause.
Yes. And I think it's interesting, and I don't want to go off on a tangent about this or anything. Oh, I just think
it's kind of what the show's about.
Just is it
Netflix and new media and streaming?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that it's interesting how the format of Netflix and the culture of binge watching has really fundamentally changed how television shows in general are formatted now, as opposed to how they used to be formatted. Like, it's so obvious when you watch older shows, like you're binge watching older shows on Netflix, and then like you have to go through them explaining last week on whatever, and you're like, I know, I just saw that. Watched that. I just watched it, and then I stopped long enough to pee, and then I came back. So I don't need you to tell me what happened last week or whatever.
Which is almost never a concern in the modern streaming era.
No, no, not at all.
Streaming and binging, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's just a thing we get with the streaming era, and especially with the production design of Lisa Hannawalt, is that we get these opportunities for these really, really quick background gags. I mean, the writing does it too. There's that point where Emily just says, like, oh, I don't even remember what she's trying to avoid saying, but it ends with Assassin's Creed, that new video game.
Right.
Just the really minor details put into establishing the 2007 setting.
Oh, I think it was when she was talking to Todd and it seemed as though they were about to get into an uncomfortable conversation in which she was going to have to admit that she liked him romantically.
Yeah, but, no, I don't remember the literal words she was avoiding. Right.
But yeah, but then, yeah, oh yeah, and then she's like, oh yeah, oh yeah, she said, I love something like, I love you, but then it's like, Assassin's Creed, that great new game that just came out.
Yeah.
So, in case we were curious as to what year this was.
2007.
And 2007.
Like, as we were joking, like, every show is guilty of this. Anytime there's a flashback, you know, that's how we communicate time on these kind of shows, is through these kind of cultural references. You know, hey, this flashback's set in the 80s, which means you bet your ass Michael Jackson's going to be the sound cue that plays us into the 80s or whatever.
Sure.
This show just goes the extra mile by leaning into it as heavily as possible with billboards that say, don't tase me, bro.
Oh, my God.
And we are now on our third fake pop song for a given era, because there was that previous episode where they did generic 80s and generic 90s pop song.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And this was the one that was all auto-tuned and stuff.
Yes. Princess Carolyn is singing about auto-tune. In the previous one, I'm sure it's Bojack who's singing. He's just like, you know, generic 90s grunge song.
Yeah.
Something from Seattle.
Oh, so good. They're so good at that.
And an obvious reference to Nirvana and Black Hole Sun and that kind of shit.
Sure.
Hey, kids, music's good.
We like music.
Hey, kids, I don't know if you've heard of this band. They're called Nirvana. Leslie, may I read all the gags?
Yes, read the gags.
All right, there is a moment right after it is revealed that the Bojack and Princess Carolyn fuck out was a fake out. We move ahead toward Princess Carolyn driving to a generic 2007 pop song in which she sings about the auto-tune, so everything sounds kind of weird. She is in her car driving from right screen to left screen, and we see a series of storefronts that read as follows. Velour tracksuits. Home loans. No job, no credit, no problem. All flip for you flip phones. My Chemical Spray Tan. Britney Shears Hair Salon. Umbrella Ella Ella. Which, whew, boy. Retro. Don't Taste Me Froyo. Subway Kids Eat Free. That one feels...
Woo! Oh! Oh, yikes. Okay.
You sometimes kind of forget that dude was ever involved with that brand.
Yeah. Well, I forget he exists a lot of the time, and then it's like, yeah, he was the kitty diddler who lost a bunch of weight eating Subway sandwiches.
Yeah, because I walk past the Subway and I look at that place and I just think, rubbery. I kind of forget about the, Anywho, move along.
Yeah.
Bear Spray, playoff of the Hairspray musical that was obviously wildly popular in 2007. Oh, I mean, there was the film.
Yeah, I was about to say they did the remake in 2007. It had Zac Efron in it.
It did. I don't get this one, but the Astronaut Diaper Depot, Cover Your Full Moon. Was there a space thing that happened in 2007 that I don't know about?
Oh, honey.
Oh, boy.
Yes. I think this was 2007. I think it was. This woman who was an astronaut became obsessed with this guy that she was sleeping with, but he was married, and
oh wait, maybe I know about this, keep talking.
Yeah, and she ended up driving like from, I want to say, Texas to Florida, but I can't remember. She drove straight all the way because she because she wore diapers instead of stopping to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, yep. Okay, I do know about this. It just, I did not connect that at all.
Yeah, it's a deep cut.
That's a fucking, woof. Okay.
Boy, that was 2007, right?
That's like a Tumblr post I read 3 years ago. Like, I that like when I say, oh, maybe I've heard about that, I mean, literally, that is probably a tweet thread I read 4 or 5 years ago. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
You unlocked some fucking Manchurian Candidate dark knowledge in my brain.
Right? Now I have to look and see. Aha! Aha! I was right! She drove from Houston to Orlando, Florida on February 4th and 5th, 2007. So that is what that is referencing. Yes.
We are coming up on the anniversary of that then.
I can't believe that I remembered that much about it. About a wrinkle of my brain that I am never going to get back. Oh well. Anyway, that's what that reference is for.
The next one says, there's a storefront for Nas's Big Ass Chains, a reference obviously to the rapper. There's a 1 hour photo place, which is funny in and of itself. Washington Mutual, everything will be okay, refinance if you dare.
My goodness.
Boy. Eel or, there's a billboard for Eel or No Eel. God. One just says 2007 t-shirt outlet, not very funny. We Remote Wrist Strap Warehouse, nothing but strap. Circuit City, reopening soon, ?
Oh my god.
Zune, Amoeba MP3, Fallout Koi, with the giant sign that says, we don't buy CDs, records, cassettes, or 8-tracks. This is in reference to the fact that in the 80s and 90s flashbacks, there were record stores at that location.
Oh my god.
There was, in the 80s, it was a record store, and then in the 90s, it says, we no longer accept vinyl. It's now the 8-track store, or the cassette store, or whatever.
Oh my god.
So this is, it's now an MP3 store in 2007, right, which is the funniest thing in the world, because
I was going to say, what the fuck is an MP3 store?
Are not a physical commodity.
That's not a thing.
Ah, Leslie would know. They worked for Apple in 2007.
You know what, bitch?
David Hasselhoff floor burgers.
All I'm saying is...
And then there are a number of posters. Well, here it is. The words home slice and redonkulous are used by Emily, which are, oof, boy, high school.
Yeah.
For me, and not for you.
Thanks.
And then, the exact phrase she uses is Ubisoft Assassin's Creed. So she is trying to say, I love you. Ubisoft. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Assassin's Creed, that new video game.
I knew what I was talking about.
There are also two posters in the background that say, I can't has cheeseburgers, with a photo of that cat.
Of course.
The phrase in the Starbucks, hearty vegan fraps. Remember when fraps were everything anyone cared about?
You know what, though? I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
Fraps were good.
2007 was a purer time. 2007 was a pure time when it came to the internet.
Epic fail.
I mean, this was when people were all just dicking around on the internet before they started using it to yell at each other.
Mood.
I'm just saying.
I spend too much time on the I Can Ask Cheeseburger website.
Do you remember You're the Man Now, Dog?
Do you remember when memes were categorized?
Yes.
God, the fucking past.
Do you remember Rage Comics?
God, kill me. Strike me down where I stand. Do you remember how Rage Comics evolved directly into Pepe memes?
No.
And now they're a Nazi thing?
What? That's what I'm saying! 2007 was pure, and now everything is shit. That's what I'm trying to say.
This is the bad place.
This is the bad place! This is the motherfucking bad place!
Oh,
all right.
Boy. All right, moving right along. Hey, this is also incidentally the scene where Todd's asexuality is first seeded.
Mm-hmm. This episode, and indeed the episode before it, and indeed the episode at, like, these first episodes of this season do a fantastic job of putting forth information that is going to come up later in a very significant way, but doing it in such a way that it is very subtle. For example, Todd's asexuality coming up for the first time, when really you think, oh, maybe he's just inexperienced. When you backtrack later on, you're like, oh no, that totally makes sense. This totally makes sense.
In this scene especially, Emily asks, like, so, who do you have a crush on? He's like, oh, I don't think I have a crush on anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's anyone. It's got to be. And then he says, like, some generic female name. He says, like, Sarah or Jennifer or something.
Yeah.
And Emily is very, very clearly into him, and he is so very clearly oblivious to that. And that will, of course, later be elaborated upon when he, in the restaurant, says, I don't think I'm anything, when asked if he's gay or straight.
Yeah.
He's clearly oblivious in 2007, but then kind of only just dawning into it in 2017.
That's what we call growth. That is what that is, particularly for a queer person.
You know what that is?
That is what we call growth.
Growth.
So there's that. This episode also contains the very, very first mention of the Seahorse Milk ads that Mr. Peanut Butter was in. Starting in 2007, that's when he started doing the Seahorse Milk ads. And we will find out later in Fish Out of Water that now it's like he's huge in Japan, kind of that kind of situation.
Oh, that is quite literally the joke. It's referencing all those celebrities that do like weird Japanese whiskey ads. I thinking of Bill Murray?
Mm.
I believe so.
But they all do it though. I mean, they all do that.
Yeah, but he was like famously like the face of.
Yeah, because he was in Lost in Translation, and that's what that entire. Well, that's not what the movie was about, but that was a plot device in the movie.
Oh, right. Am I thinking of fictionalized reality, or am I thinking of?
You're thinking of fictionalized reality. You just implanted that in your brain. You're like, no, it's Bill Murray. It's
Orson
totally.
Welles.
What about Orson Welles?
Orson Welles did those like weird ass Japanese steak ads.
Oh, well, I mean, like I said, tons of celebrities.
Oh, no.
Big name celebrities will go to Japan because they make a shit ton of money doing watch ads or whatever.
The person I'm thinking of and the person that the Lost in Translation character that Bill Murray plays is based off of is that Orson Welles way back in like the 60s or 70s did whiskey ads in Japan.
Oh, okay.
So he was like the first. I mean, okay. I'm sure other people did it, but that's like...
Well, now they all do it.
Yeah, that's like the most famous first case is Orson Welles doing weird-ass Japanese whiskey commercials back in like the 70s or whatever.
Gotcha.
Which Bill Murray's character is more than likely based off of.
Hmm.
So that's
the first mention of the Seahorse Milk ads. I'm trying to think what else is in my notes here. Oh, I'm of course now talking about continuity, but I just really, really love the detail. It's not even necessary. It wasn't even relevant to a plot in any way, shape, or form, but I'm just really happy that the running monkey guy now has a wife who runs with him. And they're like at the beginning, when we go back to the present, you see him running and he's running with presumably his wife. He's running with some other lady who is, you know, they're both old, so whatever. So I just think like that was a really nice, like they didn't have to do that, but they did. And I feel like
Leslie's the observant one, because I didn't notice that.
The eyes of the show, Ben. Eyes of the show,
and I'm the... Every time I almost call myself the brain, I feel like I'm being mean. I'm the smart one.
It's okay.
No, Leslie's just the observant one, and I'm the remembers Orson Welles one.
Right. You're here for the encyclopedic knowledge. Although, I would like to say I'm very proud of myself.
For remembering the diapers.
For if you must put it that way, sure. Sure. For remembering the diapers.
I am watching the Orson Welles Japanese whiskey commercial right now, and I'm going to say with certainty, this is 80%. 80% chance this is what the most interesting man in the world, Dos Equis guy, is also based off of.
Well, I'm going to have to watch that later.
I will send it to you momentarily.
Okay.
After we're done recording. Yes. Hey, as I was watching this scene with Emily, and I was thinking back to the greatest character of season 2, Wanda, I really like this show's love interest.
Okay.
I feel like that's not a... I think... Okay. Here's the thing. I'm gonna hit you with some sitcom philosophy.
Okay.
In sitcoms, typically... Especially because a lot of sitcoms center around male stars. I am particularly thinking of like shows like Seinfeld, where the main character will have a girlfriend that shows up for 3 or 4 episodes, and then they break up for some reason, and then they never come up again.
Yeah.
Seinfeld is rife with that. Frasier is rife with that.
Mm-hmm.
A show I watched religiously earlier last year. But there's like, I mean, I feel like there's, I'm sure there's others that I never even saw. I'm sure the Friends had a bunch of bit parts, I mean, for girls who came over. You know,
half of the premise of How I Met Your Mother is watching Ted go through a bunch of women.
That's probably a prime example. Yeah, is Ted had plenty of people who showed up for all of 4 episodes and then never came up again.
I do the TV good.
Yeah, you do. So, you know, so in a world where, in a lot of those shows where, and I apologize, but this is kind of the way the show writes them, there's just a lot of occasionally attractive brunettes that show up on those programs and then they disappear and are never heard from again and I can't remember their names at all. This show puts a lot of effort into its romantic opposites in the form of Wanda and Emily. And that gecko question mark that Todd dates in season 5.
Oh, she's the axolotl. She's an axolotl.
Thank you. I like all of those characters, and I feel like they are all visually and character-wise unique enough that I can remember them down the line, even if I don't remember one of their names. Which I think is unique among sitcoms for the most part.
Yeah, I agree.
I like Emily a lot, and I like Wanda a lot.
Yeah, Emily's great. I love Emily. I love Wanda. I really do like how fleshed out they are in general. To the
point where I kind of feel bad referring to them as the love interests.
Well,
like they are, but they're also frequently a lot more than that.
Yeah, they. I mean, categorically, they are there as the love interests, but much in the same way that another show that I watched recently that is very good fleshed out its archetypal characters. Yeah, but I already talked about that. Yeah, this show does that really brilliantly in the same way. And I think that it's really refreshing to see female characters who are given a lot more than, at best, not being fridged.
Yeah. Or, hey,
that's
whatever.
That's very refreshing.
Know, hey, whatever happened to Rachel? We stopped seeing each other. By which I mean the actress's temporary 4-episode contract expired.
Pretty much, yeah.
And we forgot to write an ending for their story.
So let's talk about the BoJack Horseman show.
Yeah, why not? Let's dig into it. Oh, sorry, one last thing. There's a Nintendo DS in the Starbucks. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Whew.
Oh, wait. Really quickly, too.
For the record, I still have mine. Go on.
Your DS?
Yes.
I have a DS Lite I still have.
Oh, I think... Oh, shit. No, mine's the DSi. But anyway.
Mine's the DS Lite. Like, straight up. I still have it because I like to play Chrono Trigger on it. Anywho,
hell yeah, good game.
It's my favorite video game of all time ever, Ben. That is my all-time favorite
video game. Right, you have gotten mad at me on Twitter about this because I've never played it. Anyway, what were you going to say?
Oh, bitch. I was just going to say one last thing before we dive into the BoJack Horseman show. Actually, you know what? Never mind. Cut that entire thing because that's my favorite gag and I'm saving it for the favorite gag segment.
All right. Fair enough.
So let's talk about BoJack Horseman, the BoJack Horseman show.
All right. Let's do it. Oh, I'm sorry. As I am scrolling down, I did just scroll past my 2 notes. Quote, Kitty got claws, comma, Princess Carolyn can get it.
Oh, Lord, Ben.
I know.
You're a furry.
Let's move on.
Okay. Whenever you point the finger at somebody, you got 3 more pointing back at you. That's all I'm saying.
Not if I point at you with all my fingers. Yeah, let's talk about the BoJack Horseman program, which is revealed to be an attempted 2007 and not much further past that revival of BoJack Horseman's career that is implied to have maybe only been a test pilot.
Yeah.
Did it ever air?
Did it air? I feel like it must have aired, because
if those like BuzzFeed journalists know about it,
that's what I'm saying. And when he went on the press junket, I feel like somebody asked him about it at one point. So like maybe it was one of those things where they had a few episodes out and then it got like immediately canceled.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's how. Yeah, especially because in the canon of this show, the studio executives gave them no notes, which means it probably got greenlit to season right away.
Yeah,
which means they probably, because typically what happens is, I mean, a pilot is literally a pilot. Like, they make a 1 pilot episode, and then the next episode 2 of the show maybe doesn't get made till 6 months later.
Right.
Because they fine-tune the show and hire more people. And, like, I don't know what. Oh, like Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Like Danny DeVito doesn't show up till like season two, like that kind of stuff. They do kind of tweaking with it like that.
Whereas, well, like Sherlock as well. They did a pilot that was 60 minutes long.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sherlock famously has a has a pilot that is
unaired pilot. Then they ended
that they
up
redid
tweaking
completely.
It. Yeah, it's so different.
Well, they not only reshot it, they redid the entire script. They changed a ton for Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, we really did bring in the lowbrow and highbrow version of that example. I brought up Danny DeVito and Always Sunny, and you brought up the BBC Sherlock series.
All I'm saying is there are two kinds of people.
Would you care for an egg in this trying time?
Oh, gracious.
Oh, boy. That'll be the first and last time Always Sunny comes up on this program. I'm sorry.
No, it shouldn't be. It's a good show.
It's a great show.
I haven't seen all of it, but what I've seen of it has been very amusing.
Parts of it are good to skip. Anyway.
Fair. I mean, I've seen the Nazi memorabilia episode.
That's the one I meant.
I figured as soon as you said it, I was like, I'll bet he's talking about the Nazi memorabilia episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
Anywho. what were we talking about? Oh, yeah. So I think it's implied that because the studio never gave them any notes, I think it probably got greenlit to a series right away.
Yeah.
Which means, yeah, I'm more than willing to bet 3 or 4 episodes of that came out and then got quickly canned when no one watched it and or everyone realized it was going to be bad.
Because it was terrible.
Yes, we are a fly on the wall very briefly, or a spider with some drinks in the room where they are writing it. And it sounds like garbage.
Real garbage. I mean, it definitely sounds like exactly the show that you would make if you are a former massive television star.
Who hasn't done something in 15 years.
Who hasn't done something in 15 years and who is so up his own ass and thinks that he is so wonderful and great that people would actually want to see him doing whatever the hell he wants. And that was the BoJack Horseman show.
And it does remind me, to bring it back around to Netflix, it does remind me of how winkingly meta a lot of the Netflix revivals are. Whether that's Arrested Development or Fuller House.
Yes.
Because Netflix has recently got in the habit of reviving shows you enjoyed in the 80s and 90s and maybe aren't good 20 years later, but you remembered it fondly and you talked about it a lot on Twitter, so they had to remake it. Sure. Whether that's Fuller House or... what's the other big... Gilmore Girls.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
They revived Gilmore Girls and...
Okay, Gilmore Girls and Fuller House are different, though, because Gilmore Girls was like a special. It was like a 4-episode mini special.
Well,
that's
still.
That's all it was ever meant to be, whereas Fuller House is now in season...
I know they've done 2. If there's a 3rd on the way, I don't know.
No. They're on season either 3 or 4.
Oh, like, shoot me in the face. Currently. Cool.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've actually watched it or not. I'm guessing you have not.
I haven't watched the original either.
Yeah. So, it is... very aware of what it is.
Yeah, winkingly meta, I believe, is the phrase that.
That is what I will say about Fuller House. It is incredibly, like, literally, they'll say something along the lines of, "Gee, I sure do wish that Michelle was here," and then everyone looks right at the camera, like it's just all kinds of shit like that all the time.
Yeah. So BoJack during the writer sessions for this is like, "What if it opens with me just taking a dump on the VHS copy of Horsing Around or whatever?"
Right.
And like I was rewatching the episode for this show and I heard that line and I thought, oh, okay, you can just at Fuller House directly.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
But
that's not true though. That's not true though.
Which they, I believe hadn't come out yet, so but,
they don't take it hadn't come out yet because it only came out, it doesn't matter when it came out, but it wasn't yet. So I don't think that that's what they were doing. I think that this was definitely more of an exercise in showing how arrogant BoJack is than talking about reboots or reimaginings of old shows.
Sure.
In general.
Because had any of these big Netflix or otherwise, had any of these big revivals, Arrested Development was like the only one by that point.
Yeah, Arrested Development had happened at that point.
I mean, certainly movies, it happens with movies all the time, more often than it does TV shows.
Yeah, but I don't think there were any, I don't know if there were any other television shows that had been
whether that's
truly revived
like,
at that point or not. I don't know.
I'm sure I'll think of one later, but I'm trying to think of a movie that, like a, you know, a Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls kind of movie that's like purposely irreverent of its previous source material, but I can't think of one off the top of my head. Yeah, anyway, that show sounds like it sucks.
What, Fuller House?
No. BoJack Horseman.
Oh, the BoJack Horseman show. Yes. It is garbage. It is hot garbage. It is hot, self-indulgent garbage. That is what it is.
What's great about this show is that it does tell us at the very end that this show is garbage. But also, we don't need to be told it's garbage because we hear the brainstorming session and boy, it sounds objectively bad based on everything they suggest.
Yeah.
The only one I couldn't remember off the top of my head is taking a shit on a VHS tape. But yeah. Hey, that's bad enough.
And then they keep saying, you know, we should just say something like, hey, bitch, but not that, change it later, but not that, but say something like that. And then that's what ends up going into the show because they never changed it to something else. So just, it was just really self-indulgent crap.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And it sounds, I guess prestige television has been around a lot longer than Netflix, obviously, but Netflix makes a lot of prestige television. And boy, I mean, it's obviously that based off of like, what if we just do a shot that's like just my eye for like a minute or whatever?
Yeah.
Like that very much feels like a, I don't know. I feel that feels like an AMC show that has gone off the rails a little bit.
Oh, or you mean like an HBO show or like a good FX show or really any of those shows that are on the premium channels that have really started to come into their own since The Sopranos came out. Don't get me on this subject because I'll just talk about it forever and ever and ever. It's in my bio, in fact. It's a whole thing. It's
your Westworld, your Game of Thrones is.
Yes. Well, I wasn't going to mention either of those, actually, but yeah, sure, good examples. So, yes, so it's garbage and it gets canned very early on. And that's the BoJack Horseman show. And now we have a little bit more history as to BoJack's career. Previously, we did not know that he had done anything at all between Horsin' Around and his Secretariat venture. But now we know that he did, in fact, participate in this ill-received, short-lived, indulgent garbage show. Which is great because that is exactly what you would think a guy like BoJack Horseman would have done with himself to try and regain relevance.
Because he, he obviously starts off. Huh?
I said in 2007. That just seems like. Yeah.
Well, because he starts off his career as like a goofy TV sitcom dad. But the BoJack we know as a person is a lot more of an edgy, in-your-face comedian.
Sure, and I think that he was trying to capitalize on that.
Yeah.
And I feel like he even says, like, people don't know the real BoJack, and that's sort of how this whole thing starts. So,
yeah,
that's definitely what he's trying to accomplish.
And I don't even mean as an aspect of performance. Like, it just seems like that's him amongst his friends. What? I'm just supposed to blah, blah, blah. You know, like, that's kind of how he talks in that super snide manner.
Sure.
And I guess he wanted to try to translate that to TV.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
It did not. Spoiler alert, did not work.
Since we're talking about time jumps, obviously, from 2007 to 2017, can we talk about the inverse of Princess Carolyn and BoJack's relationship?
Ooh.
And how that evolves?
Yeah.
Because in 2007, when she is but a humble intern, and actually, I guess, becomes an agent halfway through the episode, because her boss just up and quits and puts his corded phone into a briefcase, which was honestly one of my favorite jokes.
Yeah.
I'm a simple man with simple pleasures. I'm the opposite of that 50 Shades scene.
Ooh.
Never mind.
I've never seen it.
No, the meme, the... My tastes are...
Oh, yeah, my... Oh, yeah.
Or whatever. Yeah, I'm just like, whatever it is. Funny dog joke.
Yeah, that's part of your charm.
Thank you, but yeah, her boss just up and walks out and he's like, I always wanted a family and I'm not getting that now. Which is, by the way, obviously foreshadowing to Princess Carolyn's entire plot line that she wants to be the gal who can have everything.
Yeah.
The working woman who wants, specifically a kid.
These first few episodes have so much foreshadowing in them.
Lots of seeding, getting it in early.
So much.
The harvest will be plentiful.
Mm-hmm.
But, as she is a intern becoming an agent for the first time, she is heavily dependent on BoJack because she's the only client of her former bosses, and I guess now hers, that she is directly connected with in more ways than one. Wink, wink. Mm. But, you know, she's like, she's very dependent on him. She's kind of in that scene where him and I assume it's Cuddly Whiskers.
Yes.
Walking around the back lot. She's kind of like tagging along and like weaving between the two to kind of like, well, BoJack, here's what I was thinking, you know, kind of stuff. She is very,
oh yeah.
She is very dependent on him. And in 10 years, that is going to be the exact opposite, where he's like, hey, do you have any work for me?
Yeah.
I haven't done anything. And, you know, and she's like, oh, God, I guess I still have to babysit this loser.
Yeah. And she, because she was very, very keen on, like, really making sure that his career was on the right path and that he was focused and that he was doing what he needed to do. And she had her own ideas. And he would say, oh, well, you know, he said something along the lines of having his own ideas with Cuddly Whiskers, and which we all know how that turned out. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it definitely is the polar opposite of how things are now between Princess Carolyn and BoJack. And I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that once this show tanked, he didn't have anything. He just had an agent, Princess Carolyn.
And no projects lined up.
And none projects.
None until he is offered a book deal. And then he fucks that up colossally. And then
we all know how that turned out.
And then he's offered a movie deal and he fucks that up colossally. And it's wild that he gets that prestige TV show in season 5, considering how badly he biffed the previous two entries.
Well, that's because Princess Carolyn is a goddess and is very good at what she does.
Pretty kitty cat claws.
Mm-hmm.
Boy. All right. I think that's going to wrap up our the bulk of our discussion. Do you want to talk about favorite jokes real quick? Because I got mine.
Okay. I definitely have mine. My favorite joke of the entire episode. Obviously, this was a heavy hitter of jokes. This was a heavy hitter episode where you had just a lot of, like, you went through a list of gags. There were just a ton of great jokes. But my favorite one was definitely when Todd and Emily are in Emily's bedroom and her dad comes home.
Fuck.
And he has to leave. And she said, and it's revealed that her dad works on The Sopranos. And so he uses the reel of the finale to leave.
Sopranos finale, parentheses, yeah. Only copy.
Only copy. And then, of course, he rips off the end of it. And then he says, whoa, Tony marries Dr. Melfi. That's crazy.
That's
my favorite. My favorite. Of course, mine would be a Todd moment. But
Leslie, forgive me. I never saw The Sopranos.
But you know about the finale, though, even though you've not seen it, right? How it just stops. Yeah.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, everyone. It just stops.
The door opens and the film stops.
Yeah. It just goes to black.
My favorite joke is a lot lower brow. It is Mr. Peanut Butter just yelling at one point, God, tennis makes me so mad. No one ever tries to catch the ball. And then he just tries to, like, do some heavy breathing to calm down.
That was a good one, too. Yeah. Yeah, that was a really, really good one.
One of my all-time favorite things is I truly, truly, honestly do when the animals in the show do animal things.
It's fantastic every time it happens.
Specifically Princess Carolyn and Mr. Peanut Butter. Whether that's the subtler gags like Princess Carolyn just having like a cat swiping toy on the edge of her desk as if it were the little 5-ball bearing.
Yeah.
Perpetual motion machine or whatever. But also... season 1 when Mr. Peanut Butter opens the trunk of his car and it's just full to the brim with tennis balls.
Balls and they all just fall out, yeah.
Or I think it's maybe later this season when he just says, we're watching Bones tonight. And he's super excited because he thinks it's about chew toys.
Yeah. And then he gets corrected.
Yeah, it's like, turns out it wasn't about the kind of bones I wanted.
He's great.
That is my favorite gag. It's just him just... God, tennis makes me so mad. And you can hear the Paul F. Tompkins voice warble in the back of that. I dig it.
That's really why you like it so much.
I do. I love Paul F. Tompkins so much.
I mean, he's pretty great.
He's pretty great. Also, there's a cameo appearance, silent, of character actress Margot Martindale during the premiere, which I appreciate.
Yes! Yes. I forgot about that. So she is there. Actually, she's not. It's not the premiere. It's the reading. It's the table read.
Oh, she's at the premiere too.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, she's sitting on the couch with some other people. Oh, ready to watch the premiere.
That's right. I definitely remember catching her at the table read, which we can only assume is potentially how they met. Maybe.
Oh, sure. I'll buy that.
Origin story.
Maybe she was in the BoJack Horseman story, or show, or whatever.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Oh, I mean, BoJack Horseman story is the name of the pilot.
Yeah, BoJack Horseman show. She would have. I mean, if she was at the table read, why else would she be there if she's not on the show?
Duh. Yeah.
So yeah.
Ooh, some brilliant insight from Ben Hamlin.
Maybe she was on the show.
You're the observant one. Hey, folks, this has been Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. I'm Ben. You can find me at Ben C. Hamlin. That is BenchamLin over on Twitter.com. For the unobservant like myself, that's my full legal name. Leslie, where can people find you?
You can find me at Vanetti on Twitter.com, where I will be tweeting about observant things like TV and movies and whatever strikes my fancy this week.
For the equally unobservant, Vanetti's a nonsense word.
It is. It is a nonsense word.
You can find us both at InfinityBreak23. That is InfinityBreak23 on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, where we are telling stories our own way. Those are the various social media and news feeds, and we highly encourage you to follow us on those as we announce more about our January and 2019 lineup. We have a lot in the works here at Infinity Break, and I have tons that I want to tell you about. But mostly, hey, you know what? I'm gonna drop a little secret right here. We are launching a films podcast, a queer films podcast specifically, in February 2019, probably at or around Valentine's Day specifically. It is going to be a brand new show from a number of new hires to Infinity Break that I am very, very excited about. I'm going to announce more details in future episodes to come, but please stay tuned for that and stay on the lookout for an official news post on our various social media channels. Once again, Infinity Break 23. But in the meantime, Leslie, you and I are doing something in a couple of days.
We are. We are doing something real, real, real fun.
Folks, if you thought, hey, I like Infinity Break shows, but what if they lasted a day? Well, good news. We are doing a 24-hour live streaming event from January 26th at 10 in the morning to January 27th at 10 in the morning. 9:59, probably.
Oh, boy.
We'll maybe run a little late. 10:05.
It'll be fun.
Gonna play it fast and loose. It is going to be 24 hours of various segments of our various mini podcasts and mini live streaming shows, all compiled together for one big streaming event. Leslie and I are both going to be heavily involved. I'm going to be hosting and dungeon mastering about 10 hours of tabletop gaming across Pathfinder and Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, as well as leading a discussion on the best Spider-Man villains. There's more even past that, but those things I am doing with Leslie over on the other end of this Skype call. Leslie, tell the folks at home what you're doing.
Oh, well, you mean aside from participating in these campaigns, these side adventures that you will be DMing?
Actually, you are not in my game.
I'm not in your game?
No, you're in Johnny's game.
I'm in Johnny's game. I'll be in Johnny Rinaldo's game. Aw, Johnny. But I'll be in Johnny Rinaldo's game. But what I'm most excited about is it's going to have to be the movie. It's going to have to be House on Haunted Hill. 1959, Vincent Price, perfection, amazement. I am going to be providing commentary along with some other hosts. What's great about this is that I had no idea what movie we were going to be watching, and it just so happens that I love this movie, and I have loved this movie since I was 19 years old. I have watched it several times. I am so pumped.
Our very own Leslie Yates of this very Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben, as well as Christina from Speak of the Devil and Maddie from the upcoming Queer Films podcast that I just secretly mentioned a moment ago, are doing a full-blown Mystery Science Theater style live commentary to House on the Haunted Hill. The 1959 version. I'm genuinely stoked for that. I'm technically supposed to be on break during that 2-hour block because I'll have been up for 16 hours, but I might stay up and watch it anyway.
what's two more hours, Ben? You're what's not two even more ready. Hours? You're not ready.
Especially because I'm pretty sure I clock out at midnight and then I have another show at like 3 in the morning. So I might as well just stay up.
Sure. That's what you should do. That's what I'm saying.
But Leslie, you are also going to be in Johnny Ronaldo's Speak of the Devil side quest.
Yes.
Playing a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition character of yet indeterminate existence.
I am terrified because I have not played D&D probably since 2nd edition. So I'm
Oh, well,
terrified.
Nothing's changed.
That's not true.
Can you imagine if you just, like, didn't play chess for 10 years and then all of a sudden it played, like, I don't know, Parcheesi? Like,
yeah, that would be terrible.
And then you, then you had to kind of relearn it live on the air.
This is going to be really fun, everybody.
Yeah, we're not going to stop at 10 sharp. Anyway, but you're also going to be participating in some Jackbox game segments. And I believe, are you part of Roll With It Live?
I think so. I need to double check. Yeah. But I think so.
Folks, I'm the executive producer of this program. I ought to know. Anyway, check out... If you've been following us on social media at all, you have seen all sorts of advertisements for that all over the block put up by our wonderful social media manager, Nathan Hermanson. We encourage you to check those out, and we encourage you to tune in with us on twitch.tv/infinitybreakgaming on January 26th and 27th for truly 24 uninterrupted hours of Ben and Leslie content. And I guess some other people will be there too.
They will be, and they're going to be fantastic.
There might actually be... If you watched the entire thing, there, I think, will be no hours in which neither you nor I are on screen.
Wow.
I think at any one point, there will either be a Leslie, a Ben, or a both.
Holy crap. This is going to be epic.
I'm going to be real sleepy tomorrow.
I'm excited.
Anyway, folks, this has been Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. You know all the stuff about the Patreon. Really, I just want you to check out that stream. Once again, our logo was done by the incredible Bethany Luthold. Our theme song is by the incomparable Andrew Davis. I am Ben Hamlin. I edit and host the show. I host it with...
Leslie Yates. I am just here.
And this has been Of Horses and Men with Leslie and Ben. We'll catch you next week for BoJack Kills.
'Finity Break shows, right? Okay, hear me out on this one. All of your favorite 'Infinity Break shows, but it's for 24 hours straight. Yeah, you heard me. January 26th and 27th, we're running the 'Infinity Showcase, a round-the-clock live stream of everything your friends at 'Infinity Break are capable of. The Super Cinema team will be ranking Spider-Man villains, Johnny has a bit of a devilish side quest prepared for his players, while Ben takes his players on a wild ride through the radioactive wasteland. You can expect plenty of tabletop, video games, comics, and comedy for the full 24 hours. And, of course, speak of the bard. Sorry about that. And that's not all! Stay tuned to our social media channels as we announce more of our lineup. I hope you're ready for the worst sleepover ever. Once again, that is January 26th and 27th on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/infinitybreakgaming. See you there!